Now we will move to item number 8, the supplemental environmental projects item. Mr. Harris?
This is a staff report on how SEPs are selected and approved. Staff has a recommendation and is asking for board direction. Harvey Packard has a short presentation. And before Harvey starts, I will just want to remind the board, in your packets today, you have two additional documents that are part of item 8. Harvey? Yeah. Hold it, is.
Look up, Harvey.
Well, despite the green and yellow on the screen, we should be able to read the text, so I'll go through this PowerPoint. About a year ago, the board had a discussion on supplemental environmental projects and talked about having a larger, more involved discussion and having more public input. So staff prepared the Staff prepared the staff report and sent it out pretty widely to members of the public. And we did get some response back, which I can talk about. But let me start out by reminding the board how SEPs are approved in the process a little bit. To do an SEP or not is completely up to the discharger. The board can't force a discharger to propose or perform a supplemental environmental project. The SEP can't be something that the discharger is already required to do, and it has to comply with all the other provisions of the SEP policy. SEPs are formalized in ACL orders or settlement agreements. Most often, recently, we find SEPs in connection with mandatory minimum penalties. And that's because MMPs are typically not contested, and that the Water Code has specific language for MMPs that includes SEPs. We don't typically see SEPs with contested ACL orders. And a lot of times the board doesn't see them at all. The board has authorized the executive officer to settle ACLs in amounts less than $300,000, and often the EO will approve those when they include SEPs. As an example, I can ask you to recall the South San Luis Obispo County hearing that we recently had. That was a contested hearing. The idea of an SEP never even came up. You know, once it was clear that the board was going to adopt a penalty, the discharger could have asked for the board to consider an SEP. The board could have asked the discharger if they wanted to consider an SEP, but it never did come up in that. I also wanted to bring up the form that was sent to you last week, and this is a form that we use when we ask for settlement of outstanding MMPs. And the point I wanted to make is that it includes a checkbox on it. And it says, if you're interested in SEP, tell us which one you're interested in, Low Impact Development Initiative and or Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Program. And it gives the discharger the option of putting money toward either or both of those projects at the time we ask for settlement. And that's fairly common now when dischargers settle MMPs. We recently settled one with the CMC for their ongoing violations. They asked that $60,000 be forwarded to the GAMMA program as part of CCAMP. Matt Keeling today told me that that money is being used for a high-priority board project, nitrate sampling in the Salinas Valley. So those that's a high-priority SEP that the board has pre-approved and that dischargers are using already. Another example fairly recently in the last few years was City of San Luis Obispo. We settled several spills with them for, I think, in the total amount of about $40,000-some, and they asked that half of that be spent on a restoration project on city-owned land, land that they'd recently purchased as part of their Greenbelt program around the city, and we approved that one. We also approved another MMP order for San Juan Batista, where they use the SCP money to build infrastructure for water recycling. So that's not something they're required to do, but it's something we support and encourage. I'll point out a few more things about those two settlements in a minute. Staff has always liked the benefits of SCPs. Dischargers like that the money stays local instead of going to the fund in Sacramento. We appreciate the local environmental benefit. But SCPs can be labor-intensive and time-consuming. That settlement agreement with San Juan Batista was probably delayed, I'm going to guess, at least a year while we negotiated a scope of work, the right language to put in the order to make sure it happens, who's going to oversee it, how the money will be tracked, how will we know that the project is completed and verified. The SCP policy requires that. There's liability for the discharger when they propose an SCP. If the project is started and for some reason not finished or we don't accept the work, they still owe the complete original amount to the cleanup and abatement account. So that's a liability that the discharger has to take on. SCPs are not quite like grants. An NGO can't go, it's not a simple process to go out looking for an SCP. We have to wait for them to come here because they have to be proposed by the discharger. And they're typically not a huge amount of money like some grants are. SCPs can invite scrutiny. You may have read in the newspaper about CAL FIRE and state parks and getting caught up in misusing settlement monies and special funds that things get squirreled away in. So we have to, anytime that we have SCPs, we have to make sure it's being done completely according to the SCP policy. LIDI and CCAMP, as I mentioned, address some of the board's highest priorities. These are two projects that are ongoing, already established, and have been approved by Office of Enforcement and even preferred by the Office of Enforcement as supplemental environmental projects. The key here is that they don't require additional staff oversight. When the CMC decided that they wanted their penalty to go to CCAMP into the GAMMA project, we checked that box. They wrote the check to the Bay Foundation, which holds that money for CCAMP. And that was it. They were done. They were released from liability. We sent them a letter saying their SCP was complete. That's even before the work is actually done because of the oversight we have over that project. We have annual work plans for each of these projects. We track invoices. They submit reports on what they're doing. So, and that work is ongoing whether or not there are any SCPs coming in. So that's why we like these two projects especially. It doesn't require the same resources that it does for instance, for that San Juan Batista settlement or City of San Luis Obispo settlement, where we have to develop a scope of work each time, get it approved, and then track the project, and it, sometimes for years at a time. We recently got a request from State Board to tell us why we have so many, or where we had over $6 million of ACL money outstanding. The board has adopted ACLs, and more than $6 million of that has not been paid to the regional board. Most of that is the Los Osos CSD fine that they haven't paid because they're in bankruptcy. But some of the money is because there are ongoing SCP projects that have not been completed, and the money still shows up as not being paid until we sign off on the project. A discharger has other options if they don't want to use the LID or CCAMP. A discharger has the statutory right to have a hearing on an ACL, and at that time they can propose an SCP to the board. Government agencies can always apply to the cleanup and abatement account for funding of projects. So there's at least two options right there that organizations have. I mentioned we got some comments on the staff report. We had a letter from the National Estuary Program in Morro Bay and letters from the Santa Cruz Regional Water Management Foundation and Central Coast Salmon Enhancement. The letters from the Santa Cruz group and the San Luis Obispo group were similar. They were proposing that the board set up a program where they combine with the local integrated regional water management programs that are ongoing in both those areas and set up a program to review, prioritize, and approve projects. The part that is a problem for us is that would still require staff resources. We would still have to develop that program, approve the projects as they come in. So while we agree that those projects may be good projects and worthy of funding, we're still recommending that the board stick with the LID and the CCAMP. The Santa Cruz group went as far as to say, and I'll quote here, "Projects should not be chosen in large part based on the degree of administrative burden for RWQCB staff," end quote. So that's the part we disagree with. SCPs are discretionary. The board and, in delegated cases, staff always have the discretion to decide what types of projects to approve. So in conclusion, we will continue to offer CCAMP and the LID as pre-approved SEP options, and in cases where dischargers want the board to consider another SCP, they have the option to do that by asking for a hearing where the board can consider the particulars of that case and whether staff resources are available. That's the end of my presentation, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
You know, Harvey, one thing you might mention is that, you know, the board, when we've discussed this over the years, has had a philosophy that although we may be taking funds from a particular discharger and applying it generally throughout the region, that the board has looked at our backyard as being the entire region and not any individual location. And that gives us the flexibility to address, you know, the highest priorities,
mm-hmm.
be it, you know, stormwater impacts or ag. And it's enabled us to move money into those two big impact areas.
Right.
And that's been something we've kind of followed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that we couldn't change how we want to do it, but that's
right.
been kind of our discussed philosophy.
Right, and that goes along with the SCP policy, which requires a nexus between the violation and the project. The nexus can be a geographic or related to the water quality or the the type of water body that was affected by the violation.
Okay. Any board questions? Dr. Hunter?
Thank you, Harvey. And just by way of history, when I first joined this board, SEPs were high on my list of opportunities to work with the community. And I felt very strongly at that time that not only is it an effective use of dollars, and as Chair Young pointed out, to work in our own backyard, but also to help in a very constructive way, in a very technical way, support education and outreach in the community, which is very hard to do, very hard to find those dollars. But in the interim, I've come to understand that staff burden equals dollars. It's the cost of allocating time to monitor projects that are on a parallel track, but yet outside of the everyday operation of our staff. And so by directing money to CCAMP, which has been such an incredible program, and now GAP, which is going to fill a huge deficit of information that we have that addresses a very serious health issue. So that, to me, has risen in a priority. But I do have a question regarding LID. And I don't, I understand that Dr. Inglis has done some remarkable work. I think the collaboration and the joint effort has been, has made great progress sorting out stormwater issues and where to make connections, and maximize those dollars, finding those multiple benefits and really putting dollars to work. So my question to you is, because all of these programs that submitted letters I'm very familiar with, and I think they rise to the top in implementing projects that meet the quality of technical standards that we're looking for, that we have to have. What I'm wondering is if we are at that point in time where the LID program, which seems to have a nexus with IRWIMP and with some of the some of the more broad, restoration efforts that are ongoing. And we know, for example, Salmon Enhancement is a leader in that. Morro Bay National Estuary Program in the marine environment, one of the few programs we have that we can point to say, yes, real dollars, real solutions. And in rather short order on that program in particular. Can we look to the LEDI program to see if it's possible that they can now add to their portfolio of potential work, where they can start to make new linkages, to start to work with the IRWIMP programs more proactively, seeking out these possibilities, setting up potential lists of projects where they can easily direct SEP monies, where they can start to add those into priorities that are already being developed within kind of sub-regions, if you will, if you look at the IRWIMP that way. Because I think the IRWIMP is a hugely important process. It's only recent that, it's really taken shape and it's got the infrastructure. Some have been more successful at getting funding, but they all have their list of priorities. They all have working scope of work that has technical review. So we know that these are sound planning processes. So I'm hoping that we can find the resources within LID to open that door and perhaps shift some of this partnership that we've had in the past to a new partnership, which could be just as effective and could, we know that SEP money is few and far between. There's some onerous parts to it that not many dischargers are willing to go through that process. Mm-hmm. But when they do, it would be nice if we could see LID taking a lead there and adding that as a new, a new element or new component to their portfolio. And that was my kind of overall thought as I read through all the letters, because I know that I want to encourage the work of these particular organizations as well as others that we're all aware of.
I don't see why we couldn't explore that with Dr. Inglis. I don't know if I have an answer, whether it's doable or not, but it's something we can talk about.
Okay. Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Harvey, I just want to confirm what you just said about nexus. I remember there was always a nexus between geographical location, but it could also just, it could ignore a geographical location and go somewhere else as long as there was a nexus to the type of violation or the type of remedy.
Correct.
And the letters that are in our packet today that I've seen for the first time, they seem to be making the case that we want some avenue that pre-designates us for a geographical location, and then we'll qualify for the
right.
for the type of violation. But in essence, they already have that option to qualify under either one of those type of nexuses, right?
That's true. Yeah, they could. What they're interested in doing is getting pre-approved like CCAMP and LID are, so that it wouldn't require individual approval. But the getting pre-approved would be a significant effort in its own right.
Understood. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Dr. Wolf.
Mr. Packard, how many incompleted SEP projects have we seen in recent years within our Region 3?
Do you mean where we forced the discharger to go back and pay, you know, basically they defaulted and had to pay that amount to the cleanup and abatement account?
You made a strong statement about dischargers are liable for completing SEPs, which is on page 3, indicating cost up to $100,000 to settle, and basically making a case that there is an implied liability there. So I'd like to know what the record is on SEP projects within a region. How many have been incompleted?
I don't believe we have any that have failed to comply or complete the project.
Yeah, I suspected that. I'm glad to see that in your presentation you gave what I would consider a little bit more of a balanced case. When I read the written language, I considered to be unusually passionate against SEP, with strong language such as flooded with requests and, we just totally swamped, we can't do it. I think the issue here is that perhaps there are different ways to handle these projects, and maybe the issue is manage them, the SEPs, in a different way and not necessarily take what it seems to be the path of least resistance, which is the LIDs and CCAMP. I think also reflecting on the value of SEPs and the history of SEPs projects within our region, there has been some tremendous benefits of local projects. And I think the community appreciate when they see fines levied to, for example, water treatment facilities. It's a sight of relief to see that some of the dollars are staying local. And I think there is basically an environmental equity issue here of not channeling projects toward LIDs and CCAMPs exclusively. So I would suggest to my colleagues here is that maybe we need a little balanced approach. I'm some SEPs and reviewing how they can be managed perhaps more efficiently for staff through the letters that were submitted. And I do agree with my colleague, Dr. Hunter, with the great work performed by CCAMP and some of the LID projects, which I have personally seen myself. But I would caution us to put aside SEPs totally for what I would consider the wrong reasons. You know, you had mentioned also the South County Sanitation District, and maybe I'm misunderstood. Are you referring to the recent hearing that we had?
Yes.
Okay. You made the statement that SEP was not brought up. Well, there are reasons why SEP was not brought up. The reasons they were not brought up is because those parties wanted to appeal the process. So there was absolutely no incentive for them to say, well, let's consider SEP projects. So I think we need to correct that statement.
I was trying to point that out, that in cases of contested ACLs, it's rarely a part of the discussion.
Yeah, because I think the community that you know made public comments were indicated that there would be opportunities for local beneficial projects to reduce flooding within the area, and you know saw those as opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I think we need to reflect a little bit on this. Some folks with their letter came up and basically want to be part of a solution, and so that's my my input on this.
Yeah. Dr. Hunter mentioned that she was a big proponent of SCPs, and we were too. This region was one of the main regions statewide that was pushing, when they were considering a new SCP policy, to leave it in place and allow regions to do it. We had a huge list of projects that we were overseeing, and we thought it was a great way to use penalty money for local projects. That was when we had, 20 more staff people than we do now, and the ability, kind of, some of the tracking we did back then wasn't very good. But we did have the ability to get those projects completed. What we're pointing out now is that we just don't have the people that we used to and the resources to do that on an individual basis.
Okay. Mr. Jordan, and I don't have any speaker cards, so as soon as we complete our discussion.
I thought you might have, so I just left off with a question. So
okay.
I understand a couple of the comments being made, but I keep hearing Mr. Packard say that there's a burden of staff that has to be overcome, and I think it's clearly a matter of return on investment. In this particular case, the investment is affected by the lack of staffing. And we need to keep a clear eye on that. We were just talking a minute ago about violation dollars that can't be collected because we don't have staffing for that. And I think that the two programs run really well. I like the staff's recommendation. And I think if there's other efforts that are going to be proposed out there, I think they also need to bring to the table the way to resolve the staff burden that it will take on our staff.
Yes, Dr. Hunter.
Yeah, Mr. Jordan, just one thing that I understand about that is it's not only that it is our responsibility to assure that the technical standards of any project that's implemented meet, just basic science, which these organizations all, have the capacity to do that. So the question there is, not so much, are they going to do the job as it needs to be done, but it is in reporting and in being accountable as one of state agencies in a time when we have seen what I believe will be heightened scrutiny of discretionary monies. And I can only say that being the recipient of a Coastal Conservancy grant last year, which ended, we were all sent letters saying, be prepared for review of your accounting records and your dispersion of or disbursement of funds, because these projects, especially when they take longer than 1 year, so they go, there are multiple fiscal years involved, the reporting is beyond the science and the technical description of the project implementation. It gets into reporting of accounting and expenditures and so forth. So it is really onerous. And for that reason, I'm really hoping that LID can open up a new door for us so that we can continue these partnerships. Now, I don't know how realistic that is, and I understand that Dr. Inglis does not also have a huge staff. So, you know, there's some limits there. But it could be through workshops, through other ways where we can start to see some collaborative brainstorming going on to figure out how and where it makes sense to make LID the house for this kind of restoration work to go on. I think somebody suggested that, and I think Santa Cruz has an incredible model where they've used the Community Foundation as the bursar for the project. So the accounting is, you know, tight. They don't have to worry about it. They've got the credibility to do that. But as you point out, Harvey, we would have to go through those steps. And I myself have had the discussion with the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation. They'd be happy to do it, but they don't have the infrastructure at this point. So all of these things would have to be developed at a cost. So we've got LID. We have the Bay Foundation. These are functioning structures that are formally in place and already authorized. So let's see what we can do through that channel. I'm hoping, I'm optimistic that we can continue this work in that way.
Okay, Mr. Harris and then Mr. Johnston.
So I just wanted to add some current events to the discussion. And if you watched the news last night, there was a news story about all state agencies are going to be audited for use of discretionary funds. And in fact, several weeks ago, that process started for the water boards, and we were asked to turn over a complete set of records regarding our SEP projects, and we had to do that in very, very short order. So we are now being audited. So,
Mr. Johnston.
I'm a little torn on this. I really, I know we as a board have a tendency to simply dump stuff on staff. Say, you guys can do it. But I don't quite see how what Dr. Hunter is proposing would actually work to use the LIDI as a way to take in, to be open to other SEP projects. I see on the slide that's up, we'll consider other SEPs, but as I understand it, that's only if they choose, if the discharger chooses to ask for an ACL hearing before us. Is that correct, Harvey?
Correct, yeah. Which has, you know, opens the door for other things that they may not want to have. You know, it opens the door for the board to consider the penalty amount.
Right. So, you know, it essentially this closes the door to other SCPs by and large. You know, I heard what Dr. Wolf said about trying to find a way to be open to continuing these partnerships. I'm not quite sure what that would look like. I'm trying to figure out if, you know, kind of if we have another option than simply approving the staff recommendation here and what that option looks like. Because I don't like to just vote no without some sort of sense of where we're going.
Well, this is a status report for us, so there's no action item. If we wanted to do something, it would have to be agendized later. Is that right, Jessica?
Yes, there's no real action for the board to take. The board could direct staff to bring it back to them for some action.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just follow up on something that Mr. Harris said about auditing. And a few years ago, the Office of Enforcement in Sacramento and the State Board, they audited the regional wards and their SEPs, their SEP projects. And the results of the audit were really negative. And so that resulted in the policy that we have now. That's where the policy came from. And that policy is very strict. So while Mr. Packard is talking about the limitations and the liability associated with the funds, it's not regional board staff. It's he's reflecting the policy that we have to follow. I just wanted to point that out.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the status report. If anyone wants to give direction to staff, we could talk about that. Otherwise, we'll move on. Take a break and then to the next item. Go ahead, Dr. Hunter.
Well, if possible, I'd like to have a follow-up report, maybe in the EOS report, on any response from Dr. Inglis and any possibilities she might see. I consider her to be rather brilliant, and I think she might have some ideas to share with us.
Okay. If you want, our contract manager, Dominic Rock, could maybe offer a little insight now.
Yeah, I'm Dominic Rock with the Central Coast Water Board staff, and I manage the LID contract. And some of the ideas about expanding the scope of what the Lone Pack Development account and project could address has been considered. We've been in discussions, staff has been in discussions with the project manager, Dr. Inglis, to look at the direction of the program over time as we go through different phases of implementing Lone Pack Development in our region. And we obviously are sort of working through a fairly intensive regulatory phase where we've adopted new requirements for Lone Pack Development in projects on the ground. And as those regulations go into the communities around the region, into their own regulatory approval process for projects, there's additional assistance that's needed in ensuring that those projects and those regulations are implemented in a very coherent and good way. So we continue working on that, but we also have an eye on the longer-term future. And that is where we start to look at issues of broader integration of regional water management, watershed planning, and sustainable communities. And so I just want to assure you that staff and the Low Impact Development Initiative actually is already engaged in those kinds of conversations and trying to develop a vision of how to best direct the funds through the Low Impact Development account. So the LID account is actually administered and allocated according to an agreement between the Water Board and the Estuary, or the Bay Foundation. And the terms of that agreement do restrict currently what we can do with those funds. So any contemplation of a broadening of the scope of the Lone Pack Development work would involve a broadening of the scope of that agreement, and in fact a readoption and reworking of that agreement. The agreement not only addresses the fiduciary and financial accounting issues, but it addresses the scope of what we want to do with Lone Pack Development. And that was approved by this board when we undertook the project. So any interest in broadening that scope would have to be revisited by the board through that agreement, I think. But I agree with you that the structure, the arrangement between the Bay Foundation using estuary program staff, and the existing management under Darla Inglis, I think, are a pretty strong suit for continuing to channel money to important projects in our region.
So. Dr. Hunter, does that answer your concern about any follow-up for staff?
So if we, if we could hear about that from time to time, because we had not heard, the long vision, I think we get maybe once a year we hear something more about LID. But, I'd like to hear more about how that is taking shape, because it makes sense to me that we targeted a particular narrow set of priorities. And as we see progress and we see other resources, contributing to achieving those goals, that we need to continue to build that list.
Okay. It's part of our current quarter's activities is to kind of nail down some of those ideas for the direction. So I think, after this quarter, we could expect to come back and provide you with an update.
That would be outstanding.
That'd be great. You could put it as part of the EO report, too.
Yeah, that'd be a good place
for
fine.
It. Yep. Dr. Wolf, any more questions?
Yeah, and when we voted to channel funds through the LID program and CCAMP, I recall vividly that we were unanimous in our vote, number one. Number two, we made it clear that we did not want to fully close the door to SEPs. And so I would like to make sure that we also are looking at similar projects and other VLIDs, meaning if, for example, riparian corridor fencing can be implemented as part of LIDs to reduce, you know, contamination of the water because of cattle. That's the kind of, I think, expanding scope that would be beneficial for, you know, local use. So I would like to make sure that, you know, we explore those examples, and then you can come back to us and say, yep, you know, we could make it work. And I think it's important, too, as a fairness to the folks who did send us letters, you know, to keep them in the loop. So, you know, they don't feel like we're oblivious to, mm-hmm. to the needs, and also the fact that we have to recognize the good work that has been done in the past. And I, you know, we can look at this as the glass is half full or half empty. And I would say it's half full, because there's been a lot of very good things that were done with SEP in the past. Thank you.
So I just want to, the example you gave, Dr. Wolf, of fencing to keep cattle out of streams, I'm not sure, and I'll ask staff to comment on it, I'm not sure that would fall within the boundaries of an LID project.
Right.
That sounds more like a non-point source mm-hmm. kind of project.
As currently drafted or written in our agreement with the Bay Foundation, there's some categories that we're supposed to allocate the funding according to certain categories. And I'd have to say that specific example doesn't fit that well into any of the categories. But without having them in front of me, I don't want to shut the door on that. It is certainly not conventionally low-impact development project to use riparian fencing, but there are some other categories about changing culture and changing approaches to achieving sustainable communities. So I'll look at that. My initial response is that Mr. Harris is probably correct that it's not a fit with the current agreement.
Yeah. Well, maybe when you bring this back, we could see the list of whatever the categories are with the foundation, and then that would give us some more to talk about. Okay. Another question, Mr. Johnson?
Just in terms of direction, I mean, I share Dr. Wolf's concern and his recollection that we were clear at the time that we allocated some substantial chunks of money to CCAMP and LIDI that we weren't closing the door on other SEPs, mm-hmm. and it very much looks like we are. So maybe this is appropriate to bring up when this comes back to us, but, you know, the question of whether there's more than two checkboxes, you know, and I think I'd like to hear a little further discussion after staff has a chance to reflect on this.
Okay, you mean when they bring it back?
Correct.
Okay. Mr. Thomas.
I just wanted to point out that Mr. Packard and I were involved in a recent settlement negotiation, and it was a substantial one. And in that negotiation, we were talking about a SEP that was different from the two that we're talking about here. So we do continue to talk about them and consider them. And we're willing, in that case, we're willing to approve that and bring that to the board. So we are considering them.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Packard, for this item. We're going to take a break, and we will resume with item number 9 in 15 minutes.